Is your child struggling with a specific subject or need help with homework? Are they asking questions that you're not sure you can fully answer? IXL Learning is an online learning program for kids. It covers math, language arts, science, and social studies. IXL is designed. This program will improve your kids' grades. Studies done in almost every state in the country, the kids who had IXL are consistently doing better. Powered by advanced algorithms, IXL gives the right help to each kid no matter the age or personality. And it doesn't have to eat up all your time. One subscription gets you everything for all the kids in your home, pre-K to 12th grade. So don't miss out. 1 in 4 students in the U.S. are learning with IXL. IXL is used in 95 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/audio. Visit IXL.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
At Alma, we know the connection between you and your therapist matters. But if you're already feeling stressed and burnt out, the idea of trying to find a therapist you really connect with can be overwhelming. That's why Alma's focused on helping you find the right therapist for you. When you browse their online directory, you can filter by the qualities that are most important to you. Then, book free 15-minute consultations with any therapist you're interested in seeing. And because 95% of therapists at Alma accept insurance, you can find care that's affordable too. You want to talk to someone, but not just anyone. Alma is there to help you find the right fit. Visit helloalma.com/therapy30 to schedule a free consultation today. That's helloalma.com/therapy30.
Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another week where we are here as Anime Initiative, a Comic Nation segment where we talk all things anime because, you know, that's what we love to do. I'm your host, Megan Peters, and I'm here with my good friends and co-workers, Evan Valentine and Nick Valdez. How you guys doing?
Good. Hey, everybody.
Nick is still recovering. Nick has been on vacation. Nick is laughing hilariously on mute as he desperately is like laughing about his
vacation. Yes. Yeah, see, that's how off my game I am. Yeah, so
was the vacation good?
Yeah. Absolutely.
I gotta know. Honestly, I as just a quick update for everyone who listens and loves all three of us here, I'm back in my One Piece era, which is an era I've not been in since, like, I've kept up with it. Like, let's be clear. I'm fully caught up with the anime and manga. But, like, I have dedicated my whole recreational life to One Piece as of late. Ooh. I restarted the anime recently, and I blinked. And yesterday I was watching it while I was at work, and I was like, I'm on episode 568 already.
Wow, jeez.
How did this happen? And I, like, totally understand now. Like, it was a lot quicker than I thought. But anyways, I'll give everybody on this update a weekly shout out before I get this is Anime Initiative.
It's so funny that people say, oh, watching One Piece takes a long time. But if you take out all those intros and outros and all the little extra stuff, yeah, each episode's like 20 minutes tops, right? Mm-hmm. Like 15 minutes,
yeah,
maybe.
It goes so fast. Like, honestly, I'm a little shocked. Well, we'll have an episode in the future if anyone's interested where we talk about the quickest ways to consume One Piece. Because if you do it wrong, it can take a long time. But yeah, we're Anime Initiative. We talk all things anime. We talk manga. We talk just general animation. You know, we really just kind of talk about whatever floats our boat. This week we have a really busy show. Actually, we have a lot of impressive shonen updates, specifically from some manga. So I'll just go ahead and kind of give a blanket spoiler warning for people reading Jujutsu Kaisen and Naruto. If you are not caught up, we are going to be talking about spoilers this week. We also have some updates on anime films. And as we move into the latter half of our show, we're going to be talking about a pretty crazy interview that went down in Japan this past week. The president of Studio Pierrot, the studio that oversees Black Clover, Bleach, Naruto as well, did a really in-depth interview where it kind of broke apart the way that anime is heading in the future in terms of release schedules, and whether seasonal anime is kind of the future of the industry. So we're going to be talking about that because I have a lot of feelings to express. but first, let's just kind of hit the news, because we have a follow-up. Breaking follow-up. I'm sure Evan's going to have a lot to say about this because he was the first person I told. Yeah. But we have an update. Mobile Fighter G Gundam is getting a spinoff. It is getting a little bit of a sequel. Now, there is a caveat. It was basically announced through the official Gundam website that G Gundam is getting a spinoff sequel. It's going to be set after the events of the original anime, obviously, from like 30 years ago. It's going to focus on events that were happening at the same time as the tournament that we didn't learn about in the anime's continuity. And it's also going to be talking about events that happen after the events of the G Gundam anime. The only issue is it's a novel. Ooh. I got so excited. He's been on vacation. He was like, Gundam, it is a novel. However, what? Speculation is already abound that we might heavy on the might here, get an anime someday. But how are we feeling, Evan?
I'm going to, when you sent me that notification originally and I saw that it was, you were like, a G Gundam sequel, I'm like, oh my god, it's happening, finally, after all this time. And then you were like, but it's a novel. I immediately really just, it. So my excitement level and just went totally down. And I know that, Megan, you presented the idea of like, well, maybe it will get an anime, you know? I have to put a kibosh on that. It's entirely possible. But here's the thing. There are many Gundam franchises that have gotten sequels or spin-offs, and they've gotten novels and light novels and manga that have never made their way to an anime adaptation. And I used the biggest example that I thought of initially when I heard this news was a lot of Gundam fans, because I didn't know this until I had to write a story about it for our site, was that Mobile Suit Gundam Wing had a sequel, and it wasn't just one novel, it was a series of novels that went on for 5 years that took place, I believe, 70 years after the conclusion of the original series. And if Gundam Wing wasn't able to get an anime sequel adapted to the small screen, what are the chances that G Gundam, as much as we personally love G Gundam, it's like Gundam Wing is such a big,
I mean, it's just one of those, it's one of the icons, you know, that's kind of how it is. I'll say this because Evan has frozen on our screen. If you're watching, I will say, so I've started watching Mobile Fighter G Gundam on the behest of my friends here. It is the wildest show. Gundam, I mean, it doesn't even feel like a Gundam show in parts. I want nothing more than a sequel, but I completely agree. We will not be getting it won't be animated. I mean, it's kind of similar where we see this pattern happen where we get like graphic novel or comic book prequels and sequels to TV shows and films here in the United States. I mean, like one of the most obvious is like the Monsterverse right now with Godzilla. They come out with prequel comics and they come out with sequel comics and things like that. I mean, this is what Gundam's doing, is basically just like the light novel version of that. The real kicker is that, you know, the reality of this follow-up being seen internationally is very low. Yeah. You know, unless you are able to, you know, import the book from Japan and able to read it, you know, nothing official is going to be probably done with this, but I would love to be proven wrong. I'd absolutely love it. And it does seem like the original director, you know, behind the G Gundam anime is involved in this novel and kind of putting together the story. So I unfortunately agree with you, Evan. We're not going to get the anime that we hoped and dreamed of. No more, you know, no more great one-liners, but, you know, at least it's somehow being kept alive.
Yeah, and I do hope that they do bring it, like, the, I mean, it's so funny because, like, the best way that you're always gonna, that I feel like people, Gundam fans around the world are able to see these sequels is through Gunplas, because mm-hmm. they make Gundam plastic models of everything. Like, they have, the mechs from Frozen Teardrop, the sequel to the Gundam Wing series. They sell those. They also sell them in America. So I'm crossing my fingers that maybe we'll get, like, you know, anime continues to grow. The Gundam series continues to grow. Hopefully we get an anime adaptation of this sequel series. But also, like, just bring those novels over. You know, bring them over to the West. We'll read them.
Just celebrating the 30th anniversary of the anime with a book. Get out of here. Get out of here. Like, if Seed Freedom can have, like, a movie come out, like, out of nowhere years after the original, like, the 30th anniversary, and you're telling me you're giving me a book? No. Get out of my face with that. Come back when you have something else.
Yeah, it's like who was expecting, and as it stands right now, Seed Freedom is the biggest Gundam movie of all time.
Yeah, yeah. Seed Freedom is insane.
Who saw that coming? I didn't see it coming.
Look, this is my official pitch to Sunrise and Bandai Namco Filmworks. Look, I know they listen to this show of ours.
clearly.
Give me a G Gundam movie, you cowards. It's fine. I mean, honestly, the campiness of it has only aged well. It has not soured. As somebody whose only introduction to it is in the present, it's amazing. I am in love with it, and I'm speaking to two people who were in love with it, you know, back in the day. That's kind of where, you know, I see that kind of coming through. But yeah, that's the unfortunate truth. There's, you know, little hope. I won't say there's no hope, but there's little hope for a Gundam sequel.
A small hope.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hope we'll go with that. But first, now that we've talked about that, let's hit our first kind of spoilery territory of the day. This is going to be about Naruto. So for all my OG Naruto fans and Boruto fans, if you're not caught up with the latest manga chapter, be warned. We are talking about its pretty big cliffhanger. Obviously, I have been a fan of Naruto since. Probably since day one, honestly. And we learned today in the latest chapter of Boruto, for those who are not caught up with the sequel, essentially Naruto, as we know him, as a Jinchuriki who has a bond with the nine-tailed fox named Kurama. You know, they've been, you know, adversaries, they've been friends. You know, midway through the first Boruto series, we learned that basically Kurama died. Spoiler alert. I've said it so many times. In order for Naruto to defeat a member of the Otsutsuki clan and access a new form of the Nine-Tailed Fox, Kurama sacrificed himself. Went away, Naruto lost his access to the Jinchuriki. Well, now Boruto Part 2 is out to Blue Vortex. It is in the post-time skip era. And of all people, we have learned that for one reason or another, the nine-tailed fox, Kurama, is now inside of Himawari, Naruto's youngest child and only daughter. No one saw this one coming, honestly. Very surprised about this. However, very excited that, you know, Kurama is not dead. I mean, I have spent decades wrestling with my feelings of this Bijou. I have read many a fanfic of people breaking down the pros and cons of the Bijou and the Jinchuriki. So the fact that, you know, when Kurama died, it was legitimately devastating because I was just like now in a good place with the character. But now he's back, so everything's okay. But I'm also very confused. Evan, it looks like you have a yeah. thought.
It's a good, I think that one of the things that all of us, the three of us, have been really surprised at is how good Two Blue Vortex is. I think that, like, it's really, we were, when you know, before Masashi Kishimoto, the creator of the original franchise, who returned to be the writer on Boruto Two Blue Vortex and Boruto Naruto Next Generations, I think that basically, like, this is what the franchise needed. It needed Two Blue Vortex in terms of it needed its own Shippuden to spice things up to make everything feel more dangerous and unpredictable. Now, like, when Kurama, quote unquote, like, died originally, I thought, like, he would come back because the tailed beasts always come back in some form or fashion. But I was not expecting him to pop up in the daughter of Naruto and Hinata. And that's a very interesting wrinkle. I'm super, like, excited to see where that goes, because especially, like, you know, Boruto himself is getting stronger and stronger. He really spent those 3 years training his chakra and everything. So being able to see Himawari close the gap, by having the nine-tailed fox presumably inside of her as well. That's a great angle. That's a great story angle. I'm interested to see where that goes.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because as we have kept on through Boruto, and, you know, it's a longer discussion to talk about, you know, the idea of like a next generation legacy series for a shonen story like Naruto. You know, looking at Boruto, you know, Uzumaki as a character, you know, he has obviously, as the star of the sequel, done a lot to kind of live up to the power legacy set by his father. And they've kept teasing really since the beginning that Himawari was also going to be a major threat. But, you know, as we see so many times in Shonen series, this kind of younger kid, this, you know, the little sister character was kind of relegated to the background until now, until, you know, we're at this point where all of a sudden these villains are coming into the, you know, hidden village, you know, trying to find Naruto, but they find her instead because they're tracing the chakra of the Nine Tails. At this point, we don't have any good explanation for why this has happened. My conspiracy theory is that Kurama, the Nine-Tailed Fox, just absolutely lied about dying.
Oh.
He was like, I wasn't actually dying. I just have to like transfer my chakra. Maybe there's some sort of like weird familial bloodline chakra going on. There's a lot of unknowns about it, but I'm definitely curious to see how this works long term. I definitely agree. Two Blue Vortex just out the gate. I mean, we have less than 10 chapters of this, you know, post time skip sequel. It's been incredibly strong, which is you know, I'm here for. I will say, you know, I wasn't necessarily. You know, I never disliked the, you know, Boruto, Naruto Next Generations. It just had a very mismatched pacing issue, which I also felt was present in the original Naruto anime. So, you know, we'll kind of see where this goes next. But yeah, Himawari might just take down her brother, which would be impressive in terms of power scaling.
That would be impressive.
Yes. And to address, you know, a second little bit of a cliffhanger and a shocker that we got from manga this weekend, we got the latest chapter of Jujutsu Kaisen, which promptly broke the internet because, again, serious spoiler warning here. It turns out that basically Sukuna, the king of curses, is Yuji's uncle.
Bum, bum, bum.
Like,
I like Nick's third reaction.
Yeah,
you think I'm kidding?
What? Okay, so okay, I know. Okay, since we're in full spoilers here, this is way beyond the bounds of season two. Once again, everyone, like, if you somehow, you know,
spoiler mode right now.
Big yeah, this spoiler, is big huge. Spoilers. This is huge spoiler stuff for post where the anime is. This is post like Calling Game arc. This is post where season three will be. So just full on spoilers. So, from my understanding, Kenjaku was, you know, the body of Yuji's mother, if I remember correctly, right? And so, there was that little thing of like, oh, is Yuji's body strong naturally because it was Kenjaku giving birth to Yuji? But, yes. Okay, so Sukuna is also related through, is it through Yuji's mother that Kenjaku was? Or is it through Yuji's father? What's going on here?
Yeah, so it's through his father. So a little bit of explanation. Literally, the chapter this week began with Sukuna giving basically a family tree breakdown. Turns out, when Sukuna was in utero as, you know, a baby with his mother was malnourished. And in order for Sukuna to survive, he had a twin, an identical twin in utero, and Sukuna ate him. Ate the twin in utero in order to be strong enough to survive. As Sukuna goes on to explain, even as, you know, in the womb, his cursed energy was so strong, him and his twin, that his twin had enough energy to reincarnate. His twin reincarnated as Yuji's father. So Yuji's father was the reincarnation of Sukuna's twin brother. That man had the baby with, you know, Yuji's mother, who is being possessed by Kenjaku. So you had two major bloodlines coming together in Yuji to basically make Yuji have both the lineage of Sukuna's identical twin brother, the reincarnation of him, and you know, the powers that Kenjaku brought with him.
Man, that kind of sucks. Like, so I know, like, I know, like, the Chosen One stuff for Yuji's been kind of building in the background. As like a thing, like, oh, why is he so incredibly strong? Why is he so, like, how is he able to withstand this without cursed energy, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, right? Like, just being Sukuna's host, I thought, that was the chosen one angle of it. Like, oh, he was bred, like, my theory was, oh, he was bred to be Sukuna's host in the future and thus sparked this whole thing. But then the Megumi stuff happened. Yeah, once again, we're in still full spoilers, everyone. You know, so the Megumi stuff happened. So, and then I was at a loss. But now hearing that Yuji is quite literally bred from, you know, to the great evils and to be like this chosen one sort of fighter, it's kind of sucks. It kind of takes the wind out of what made Yuji so fun in the beginning, that he was just a dude who wanted to have a good death and wanted to live a good life out of, like, and have in that death and peace. And it's just to see it turned into all this, like, all these years and months later, it's just like, oh man, like, it turns him from, like, just being a good dude to, like, oh, the guy who's meant to do this stuff. And that's a shame. It's a shame, but, you know, I'm still with it, of course. Like, I now it's clear that now that they're setting this up, it's setting the stage for someone who can actually beat Sukuna, which was a huge problem, because each chapter Sukuna was just getting stronger and stronger and stronger. One of those situations where it's like, okay, well, your villain's getting to such an extent, you have to bump your main character up in some way. And I guess this was it. This was like, oh yeah, no, he's the Ichigo. You know, the bleacher is like, Ichigo finds out
is Ichigo. He has the half the power to him.
Again, yes.
Make spoilers for Bleach.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Just tossing that out there. Like, Ichigo gets half the race of whatever he happens to be fighting at the moment. So, you know, he's just like, all of a sudden, you know, he just gets super strong. And that's Yuji now. So I'm curious to see where it goes. They have me, of course, But after such a reveal, that's kind of, that's whack. It's giving me bad flashbacks, you know?
I completely agree with Nick on this. I think the first thing that went through my mind when I saw this happen was, thanks, I hate it. I think that, like, one of the things, and you know, you both nailed it with the recent, like, Bleach, Ichigo's lineage being both a Quincy and a Shinigami, and he was in, like, all these different things. I think that, like, one of the things that was able to help sell these characters initially is that they were just normal people who were brought into this, and the idea of, like, interweaving their destinies where they were always going to become the strongest, and, like, right. Naruto did it also, where Naruto was initially just, like, you know, he was the son of the fourth Hokage, but he was dealing with all of these problems, and then at the end of Shippuden, they revealed that he was a reincarnated, the reincarnation, him and Sasuke original brothers.
The same thing, if you look at Luffy and you look at his devil fruit powers with what the real secret is behind, you know,
it's getting to real chosen one territory, right?
Real convenient. I give a little more leeway to Luffy because, like, that was more about the devil fruit rather than, like, Luffy himself. But, like, again, it's just like, it doesn't, like, hurt my love of Jujutsu Kaisen or the series. I'm still anxious to see how it ends and how everything goes. But it's just like, oh man, do we really have to do that again? I mean, I get it, but, you know.
Yeah. Cause I think with Luffy, I think the difference there is that it happens to be Luffy. And I really hope that's, like, what Evan's saying. Like, this all just happens to be Luffy. It all, a strange sort of confluence of, just accidents and instances that all kind of came together to make Luffy that thing, rather than Luffy being deemed to be that one. And I think that, like Evan say, that is the clear difference here with Yuji being that he is the one to do this stuff. And it's like, oh man, you were right there. And it
Well, that marks the end of our spoiler territory. Thank you for bearing with us. We just had some major revelations, but we do also have a little other piece of non-spoilery Jujutsu Kaisen news, because it looks like government officials in Malaysia are trying to build a permanent beach memorial for Nanami Kento, my sweet salaryman savior. You are caught up with Jujutsu Kaisen season 2. You know that all Nanami wanted to do before dying was to go to a beach in Malaysia. didn't quite get there, honestly. So sorry, man. But after that happened, fans flocked to that beach in cosplay, and not they left flowers.
That's cool.
They left flushies. Awesome. Yeah. They left so much stuff on the beach that they had to keep cleaning up and cleaning up. It became like one of the most like notorious Google tourism spots in that part of Malaysia. That recently one of the tourism committee executives in Malaysia said that, like, yeah, we're trying to reach out to Gege Akutami, the creator of Jujutsu Kaisen, to get his permission to make a memorial for Nanami at that beach. That's nuts. That's cool. That's the power of Jujutsu Kaisen. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah. Yeah, didn't it get like a Guinness World Record too for being like the most like in demand Gen Z show or Gen Alpha or whatever the kids are now, you know? So
yeah, the most kudos. In demand animated series.
Yes, there you go. So like kudos, animated series. It's not even just anime, right? So that's how wild this is. And so kudos to Jujutsu Kaisen clearly taking over the world, like quite literally. So I do hope this happens as a fun little thing to Nanami. And, you know, that just shows how good Jujutsu Kaisen can be when it's good. I will just say that, just tying it into the previous conversation there. You know, just it's good when it's good.
When it slaps, it hits hard. It is a huge And as our final news piece, speaking of successes, we are circling back to Studio Ghibli and The Boy and the Heron. This movie just reached a pretty rare milestone, you know, in terms of anime films. It has officially grossed more than $300 million at the global box office, which now makes it the fifth to ever do so globally to date. So we have The Boy and the Heron, obviously. Then we have Suzume, which is a Makoto Shinkai film, followed by Your Name, which is another Makoto Shinkai film, Spirited Away, which is again Studio Ghibli, and then number one by far is still Demon Slayer, Kimetsu no Yaiba, Mugen Train. So those are the three films that have crossed over $300 million globally. You know, Demon Slayer grossed over $500 million during its run, which is insane, truly insane. And what's interesting to note is the majority, except for Spirited Away, all of these films have been released in the last 7 years that have crossed this box office milestone. So if anybody ever tells you that anime films don't do anything at the box office, just educate them if you're listening.
Good for Ghibli. Like, you know, on top of like the Academy Award win and everything, just like good for them. And I really hope they take their time on, you know, putting out the next thing, because that's going to be the big test, right? It's always not the winning project or the successful one. It's the one after. Mm-hmm. That's the one that people are really, really going to look at.
Mm-hmm. You're very true. We'll have to see. I mean, director Hayao Miyazaki has said that like he has an idea for a new movie. The current head executive of Ghibli, Toshio Suzuki, has said that, you know, Miyazaki's game to keep working on it. I mean, of course, at this point, you got to factor in, you know, these guys are getting up there in age. Like, let them take their time. Like, I'm sure that is becoming a big factor in this situation. But, you know, The Boy and the Heron, so good. So we'll see if the next Ghibli project is something from Miyazaki, or if it comes from, you know, maybe a new generation at the studio. I mean, we've talked about this, the three of us, again and again, but Ghibli and Miyazaki are so intermeshed. You know, when it comes to the point that Miyazaki's no longer, you know, here to put out works, what happens to kind of the legacy of Ghibli? I think really at this point, it's a matter of finding, you know, successors, people that can push it forward. So
that's when Goro takes over.
Goro Miyazaki, Hayao Miyazaki's son, has said he wants nothing to do with that.
Yeah.
The pressure
I think that I wanted to add a thought in terms of, it just goes to show how big anime has become in general, to see like that these movies, you know, these are beautiful against the grain movies that like don't have a structure that you've seen in a lot of like, you know, movies that are made in North America in general, even like animated movies. And they cost Like, I don't know the budget necessarily of a standard Ghibli movie, but, like, I have to imagine it doesn't cost as much as, say, like, Godzilla Kong the New Empire. So yeah. that's another reason why Hollywood is getting more on board with, like, anime in general, is that they're seeing these big returns when it comes to stuff in general. And I don't think, like, really none of us saw Demon Slayer becoming as big in terms of that,
no.
in terms of the amount of money no. that it brought in. It's just no, wild.
At least not until episode 19 of that first yeah. season, where we were like, true. Oh, people know Demon Slayer is an anime. You know? So, like, yeah, and that boom after, because that's the interesting thing too, right, is the next over $300 million anime movie, is it a Studio Ghibli? Is it going to be a franchise that hits with a new movie? Is it going mm-hmm. to be like Spy Family was in theaters this past weekend? Does it have a chance of reaching that? Does
it made,
you know,
top five?
Yeah, yeah, like does when Demon Slayer releases its next movie, does it have a chance at doing that again? My Hero Academia, like it's mm-hmm. that's the thing. Like, what's going to be the next one?
I mean,
is
I
it
think
going
we know
to be
what the answer is? It's going to be the Chainsaw Ooh. Man movie.
Oh, I don't
yeah,
know.
There we go. Yeah.
We can dream. Like, yeah, we can dream.
Globally? Yeah.
Globally, yes. Yeah. That's a good that's a good guess. Yeah. It's a very good guess.
I'm throwing it in. Everybody. So well, that is where we are standing with the box office. Both television and theater is just being absolutely inundated with anime, and you know the three of us here love it. So we're going to take a quick break to pay for the show, and then when we come back, we're going to be talking about a massive interview released by the studio behind Naruto and what its implications are for the future of anime releases. Stay tuned. Hello and welcome back to Anime Initiative, comicbook.com's number one show for all things anime and manga. We are back to do our deep dive, and it's a pretty juicy one. It's rare when we get a really good in-depth interview from executives in anime studios and in the anime sphere. Well, Michiyuki Honma, who is the current president of Studio Pierrot, decided that he was ready to talk about some stuff. He did a series of interviews with Natalie, a publication in Japan, where he talked about kind of the kind of history, mythos, and approach that the studio takes to anime. So, if you are not aware of what Studio Pierrot is, it is the studio that oversees Naruto, it oversees Bleach, it oversees Black Clover. The list goes on and on and on. they oversee a lot of shows. And this interview talked about some interesting points, and one that I thought was incredibly interesting before we kind of get into the meat of the conversation about Honma's discussion of how seasonal animes has kind of become the predominant way of releasing shows, you know, at least in the anime sphere, is that in 2011, Naruto almost got canceled. I can't even process what that would have done to my young psyche, you know? Like, that was when I was in the thick of it, you know? That was like prime Naruto Shippuden era, 2011, yeah. Naruto Shippuden almost got canceled. And the same goes for Bleach. It was airing at that time. It was kind of more in its twilight hours, but you know, Bleach was also going on. It almost got canceled. And if you're curious as to why this all happened, you know, it does have, you know, a rather tragic origin. In 2011, that is when Japan suffered its kind of, you know, Great Eastern, you know, earthquake and tsunami that unfortunately killed, you know, upwards of 20,000 people, caused some billions and billions of dollars in damages. And during that time, understandably, programs in Japan were, you know, wanting to focus on recovery efforts and rebuilding efforts and the news of what's happening as they were trying to get over this crisis. And because of that, the networks that, you know, Studio Pierrot had contracts with to air its animes, Naruto, Bleach, they weren't being shown. So they weren't getting advertisement money. They weren't getting anything like that. And it got to the point where Studio Pierrot was like, yeah, we're going to have to fold. Which is nuts. Ultimately, they were able to get a loan that saved them after they got some encouragement from fellow studios in the sector around 2011, 2012. But yeah, we came very close to losing Naruto in 2011.
That's so wild.
Yeah. It's such a I mean it entirely depends, because Megan, when you said like 2011, I was just trying to think of like what was happening in the Naruto series at that time. And as we all kind of know, and as anime fans know, Naruto has become kind of notorious for its quote-unquote like filler, which is effectively like kind of the stories that the studio had to make that weren't originally from Masashi Kishimoto and they weren't part of the original manga, and those have become notorious. So like when you said that originally, my mind went to stuff like Naruto fighting a ninja ostrich, or he's fighting a robot that looks exactly like himself, or Boruto is eating a burger made out of lemons. Those are the things that I was like, oh yeah, those are the things that could have gotten the franchise canceled. But yeah, hearing that it was a much different reason is wild. I didn't know that originally.
Yeah, it's kind of insane. I will say this, and I only learned this recently, that, I mean, a very similar situation happened in the U.S. with Gargoyles, which upsets me that the primary reason Gargoyles got canceled was because it kept airing in time slots when major updates from the O.J. Simpson trial were happening. So everyone would turn off the channel and they would go watch O.J. Simpson case updates. The ratings for Gargoyles went down. Got canceled.
Just lining up with what Evan was saying about the state of Naruto at the time. Gargoyles was also in like its fifth arc or something like that, and it was all like turned into like weekly Monster of the Week kind of stuff. So there was a lot of factoring things in there where it could have also been canceled for like that exact reason, where it's like the state of the story wasn't there. And that's the thing about Naruto and Bleach and being those weekly anime, regardless of those original episodes, it kind of ties into like the seasonal stuff, because like we wouldn't be as fans of these shows as we are now if these were seasonal drops. Like if they were like just little batches of like 12 episodes here, 25 episodes here and there, like the way we watched anime back then was like, yeah, if you didn't catch it 1 week, you literally had to wait a week till it was on Toonami again. So it was like, if it was a seasonal show, you'd see it for a couple weeks a month, or you'd see it for a couple of months a year, and then that'd be it. But with these shows, it was literally like a all year round type of things by the time we got to them, and it just kept going and going and going. And that constant state of like experiencing them kept them in our little childhood brains that were getting filled with so much other stuff. So it's very important that those shows were as long as they were. And it's wild to hear that they were almost canceled for these production woes, but I'm glad they weren't, because we literally wouldn't be talking here without them, them having the length. And that's kind of why all this talk about like Pierrot's shift into potentially seasonal schedules is kind of on the one hand, we can definitely get into this. On the one hand, it's good, but to me, I'm like, I am gonna miss like I know not everything's One Piece and can be One Piece and can be literally give us 1,000 episodes, but I like having that something to count on every single week, you know. And I know there's so many troubles of like keeping that going, even with original stuff. Like I don't know, I'm just old school in that way.
I mean, let's talk about it, because in this interview, one of the most, you know, interesting pieces of information we got from Hanma was him talking about, you know, how, you know, Studio Pierrot took such pride in having, you know, a really healthy roster of annual series under its belt. I mean, you look at Naruto, I mean, it ran forever. Say what you want to say about it having to, you know, put forward so much filler content to kind of give the manga, you know, breathing room for Naruto to get itself some more canon content to adapt. But, you know, Naruto was something you could count on. It was the same with Bleach until it was ultimately taken off air. And then, you know, with more recent things like Black Clover, I mean, it was a steady release. You always knew it was coming. And then Demon Slayer happened. In the interview, Honma talks about how the release of Demon Slayer really kind of made, you know, not just the executives at Studio Pierrot, but also executives at studios across Japan rethink the way that they were releasing anime. You know, for them, they felt like big shonen series couldn't get a good footing unless they at least started annually. And Demon Slayer basically said, no, I'll do it myself. I'm going to do a seasonal two core run. And, you know, I will say, like we mentioned earlier in this podcast, it did take a minute for Demon Slayer to really pop off. You know, I for a long time there, I was like, am I the only one watching this show? No one was talking about it.
And you were, Megan. I was.
It was me. I'm the problem. It's me. It was like that for a while. But then I started seeing people talk about it in episode 10 and then in episode 15. And by the time we were approaching 20, it was everywhere. And that was the same kind of response that, you know, executives in Japan were seeing. So Honma, now as the president of Studio Pierrot, says, you know, well, we looked at that and we said, well, let's see if we can try it. And they did with Bleach Thousand Year Blood War, which has been an incredible success for Studio Pierrot. The president said when he goes to overseas convention, he feels like he's treated like a superhero because everyone is so thankful for him, you know, not only bringing Bleach back, but for making it a seasonal series. It's not a, you get it every single week all year. And because of that, you know, towards the end of his interview with Natalie, Honma said, you know, Studio Pierrot has, you know, a lot of series that are currently on hiatus that aren't on air, i.e. Boruto, the anime, and Black Clover. And, you know, he says, you know, hopefully as they come back, as we approach new release methods, we'll be able to satisfy the needs for fans globally. So this has started a major conversation on whether it seems like Studio Pierrot is looking to bring back the Boruto anime, which would be post time skip at that point, essentially, as well as the Black Clover anime, which we have not seen in a hot minute aside from its movie on Netflix. I personally, for specifically the cases of Boruto and Black Clover, I think the idea works. I think it works really well. They're established IPs. They have a fan base that will show up. And I think it will give Studio Pierrot the scheduling allowance and the production means to be able to really invest in quality pacing, writing, and animation for those two shows. However, when it comes to a universal truth of seasonal shows are the way to go in anime, I disagree. 100% I disagree, which is a difficult thing to admit given how intense time crunches and production crunches are in the anime industry. I mean, places are outsourcing like crazy. The work conditions that animators are put under in, you know, whether they're working in Japan or they're freelancing from, you know, outside of Japan, it's a lot. I mean, it is a lot of pressure to be putting out an episode of a major shonen series week after week. You know, back in the day, I mean, 10 years ago, if Jujutsu Kaisen was out, it would have been a weekly show. It would have come out weekly. Yeah. And we would have gotten some wild filler arcs. We would have gotten some wild beach episodes of Gojo.
That's one thing that I was kind of wondering. And when we started our conversation, like, I was wondering about, like, man, what would Demon Slayer look like if it was on a weekly schedule where they were creating? Because, and I don't know if all of our listeners essentially know this, but Demon Slayer's finale is coming up really soon. Like, not soon. Like, the next season isn't going to be the last season, but there's not that many arcs left.
It's coming up sooner than you may realize.
Yeah, sooner than you might expect. And
it's literally three arcs left in the show in general. Yeah. So, yeah.
I'm actually really surprised that the studio hasn't tried to do some filler stuff with Demon Slayer because of how popular it is. But
we're going to see next season.
Yep, Nick knows. Yeah. It's very interesting to look at that idea because had UFO Table, I always get that, I always mispronounce that one wrong. Had they gone into Demon Slayer by creating a weekly schedule, would it have even taken off? Because, like, would the animation in that fight against the Spider Clan have been as good and as legendary? That was one of the things that really helped push it initially. To this day, I have no idea how anime studios are able to create weekly things, especially from the idea of, like, filler, because being able to create entirely new original stories with like new dialogue, even when it comes to just looking at it outside of the animation factor, which is insane enough as it is, but being able to create a story arc that's able to create new characters, new dialogue, new like story beats, all of these different intermingling pieces, as well as like the voice recording, the soundtracks, all of this different stuff. I have no idea how they were able to keep that on a weekly release schedule, like in general. Yeah. So it's interesting. I think that in a way, One Piece is kind of becoming the exception to the norm, as it were. Like it was introduced in a time, and I would actually love to go back, because I'm not sure if Dragon Ball Z came out in Japan on a weekly schedule and it never stopped. Maybe you guys might know that better than me, but that would be interesting to see. It was pretty consistent. Yeah. I'm a little more accommodating for, because there's so much anime to watch.
My point. There is so much anime to watch. There's more anime being produced these days than there was 10, 20, 15 years ago.
And that's the major problem with the seasonal schedule in general, right? The issue is, it might seem good on the outset for these production companies who like, oh, well, we don't have to turn in an episode every week. We can take these couple of months and come back in summer with Core 2, whatever, et cetera, et cetera. But the issue is on the viewership of that. As we cover here, we know full well, and buddies who follow along with the show know full well by now, we just talked about the winter anime. We just talked about the spring season. By the end of June, we're going to be talking about summer and moving on to the next wave of shows, and kind of forgetting about everything else you kind of saw. Like the hangup of the seasonal schedule is the fact that you're kind of in it and just in it for those few months. And then that's it. Then you move on to the next thing. This is why the old school part of me is like, man, like, I know there are issues with these weekly shows, and I know filler has become such a dirty word among anime fans, when really we should, like, original content isn't that bad of an idea. Like, it's something I would have liked with Demon Slayer, because by the finale, we get like characters dying left and right, and I'm sitting there going, well, I wish I knew or cared about you. And it's these original episodes, like Naruto, you talk dirt filler, you call it, like, call whatever you want. Some of the best episodes are original content, like the Shikamaru episode where he gets to like have that chess match, and it kind of gets to go through the whole mourning period and like to go through that death. And it's such like a notable episode, original to the anime. And that's the thing. It's, we're going to miss out on episodes like that with like, yes, I get that filler, you know, all that stuff. It's part of the thing, but seasonal schedule locks you within that. You know, it's kind of like, it's I know it's because the way people watch these shows have changed, right? It's because people who see it on Netflix, they binge it all at once. They, you know, they hope the dub's out by then, because then you binge the dub, you watch it in chunks. But it's because we don't have that traditional TV watching schedule anymore. There is no need for weekly releases, but without them, you know, it's like, we're going to forget about you. Like, I hate to say it, but we're going to forget about you until it's time for you to premiere again. And I don't, like, that's where I'm hung up on it. I just, you know, if you want Black Clover to succeed, if you want Boruto to succeed, I don't want to just talk about it a couple of months a year. But I get it, because it makes sense with those. Black Clover's in its final arc, only has a few more chapters left. Boruto's on a monthly release schedule. You can adapt a couple of chapters every couple months, and then that'd be it. So I don't know, but that's where I'm hung up on it. It's the conversation around it.
Yeah, for me, I definitely agree. As kids growing up, there was a clear awareness of me knowing Wednesday, I can sit down on, well, eventually I was able to sit down on Crunchyroll or Hulu and watch Naruto. Before then, I had to watch it in 12 different pieces on YouTube. In 360. Right. But, you know, eventually I was able to go to that point where I was like, okay, I can sit down and I know I have this show every week. Then we have something like Demon Slayer that comes in. And I'll even say, to a degree, My Hero Academia, that came out as a seasonal show that is now, you know, one of the largest shonen titles in anime. you know, they were able to come in and kind of break the stigma around having that, you know, by coming out, you know, year after year. Now it seems like a lot of shows, you know, you look at like Mushoku Tensei, you know, they come out with season two, part one, and then they skip a season and they come back with season two, part two. And so that way they have a little bit more of a stretched longevity through the year to keep relevance. We're seeing that so much more often to kind of keep that conversation brewing. You know, it cannot be understated how intensely the game was changed with social media. You know, back in the day, Naruto was kept relevant week after week. Same with Bleach, you know, way back with Sailor Moon, Dragon Ball, Gundam. You know, they were kept relevant week by week because there wasn't a great way to be able to communicate with other fans that weren't in your immediate sphere. And if it went away, then you weren't talking about it. But now with social media, I mean, people are keeping series alive well past their due dates and their expiration dates. You know,
that's
true. They're making series bigger even before they're even published, you know, that you see with Kagurabachi and Shonen Jump. It's definitely changed the game, and it's evolving so quickly that animation studios are, you know, traditionally they're not early adopters in these kind of, you know, changes, but the sheer amount of success that Demon Slayer saw, not just as a seasonal show but also on social media, it seems like it really convinced, you know, shows to really, you know, studios to get on board with that. So I would not be surprised in the least if when Studio Pierrot eventually brings back Black Clover as a TV anime, the same with Boruto, I'd probably be more surprised if they weren't, you know, seasonal at this point.
Yeah.
But we know what we can always rely on? One Piece. One Piece is not changing its annual date. I want to know what kind of witchcraft the Toei animation staff is performing. What juice are they drinking? Because they are coming out with the most ridiculous episodes weekly. It's weekly. I would expect that kind of quality from a seasonal show. You know, when you have seasonal shows, you expect to have better animation. Sometimes that's true, sometimes that's not. And then One Piece comes out there and is like, yeah, no, all of us basically are tapping into the will of D and creating the greatest anime episodes you've ever seen on a weekly basis. I don't know how.
It's a perfect conflation of like just everything clicking, I guess. I don't know like how much they spend in terms of, because you guys might know, like what else is Toei Animation doing right now aside from One Piece? Like what are they working on? Daima, they're working on Dragon Ball Daima
on Daima, the new Dragon Ball show that's coming out this fall behind the scenes. I mean, they're still wrapped up with other projects for Sailor Moon, you know, Precure, Digimon. I mean, those are kind of their big holds, but they also do contract, you know, animation on other titles. But yeah, I mean, their primary push is absolutely One Piece at this point.
It just goes to show, I mean, like One Piece does have its quote unquote filler. It has. There's
but it's so good. It's still good.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's my argument about like just filler and original content in general. It's like, if you like it, what's the problem? You know, get it. I get you're like, oh, this is another week that it's not catching up to the manga. Who cares? Especially with One Piece. One Piece is the last series I want to hear this with. One Piece isn't going to end for like another 10 years. So like, who cares week to week? Oh, this is, it's still not close to what, you know, where Luffy gets gear 6 or whatever. And it's like, who cares? Just watch Chopper be wacky for a week. I don't care. This is what I want. This is what I'm here for. You know?
It's so good. Like, let me watch Goku and Vegeta play baseball. It's fine.
Yes.
Take their driver's test.
Yeah. Honestly, who cares?
Look, concepts themselves are wild. Let me watch them do like domestic housework and chores. It's fine. That's all I'm saying. Look, I'm a proponent of filler. We're gonna have a longer conversation about this because I could talk about it for a long time. Filler gets an unnecessarily bad rep.
Yes.
When it's bad, it's bad. When it's good, it slaps. And people just tend to remember the bad parts. That's all I'll say. Well, we'll have a larger conversation on this because I feel like the three of us are on the same wavelength at this point. But we are at the end of our show. Thank you for listening to us this week, Anime Initiative, where we talk all things anime, manga, animation for comicbook.com. If you want to leave us a five-star review, we would love it. We will read it on air. We will, you know, ask us anime questions. Ask us anything you need to. Ask me which filler arcs are the best in anime, and I will give you a list. So please hit us up on a review wherever you listen to your podcast, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever that may be. Leave us a review. If you want to talk to one of us or all three of us over on social media, you can find me on social media at MeganPetersCB. Evan, where can they find you?
You can find me at EV Comedy on all them social medias.
And what about you, Nick?
You can find me at Valdizology on all the medias and over at Pop Culture Social Call with Anna Rumor.
Awesome. If you also are looking for other ways to get all of your geeky nerd news for the week, comicbook.com has plenty of other shows. Of course, we have Comic Book Nation, but we also have Quick Save, which is our gaming series. And then we have The Pull List, which is our comic series. Plus, there's Phase Zero for all of your Marvel news. And we also have a Pokemon podcast that I'm a host on. It is called A Wad Podcast Has Appeared. So if you want to hear all of my deep and emotional thoughts on Vaporeon, go give it a listen. Otherwise, we'll be back next week where we will have plenty of anime news to talk about. So until then, see you later.